those who worked behind the scenes to organize this learning. It's a great opportunity for all of us, and I appreciate you taking your time to learn with me as we try to understand the avoda really of Chodesh Teves, and I think to reflect back on Hanukkah a little bit, to think about the fast that's coming up this Friday, and I guess more generally to think about, in a certain sense, the last number of months and kind of everything that we've been going through, in a certain sense, are still going through, without, you know, overdoing the COVID Torah too much. But I think there's a lot to reflect on and to continue to think about. And in Mirtz Hashem, we should just be able to move forward in a good way. But coming out of Hanukkah, I'd like to reflect backwards for just a moment. I'm actually going to pull up on the screen. Just a moment, I apologize. For those who are interested in following along with the sources. Technical difficulties, okay. We're very familiar with the words of Ma'oz Sur. And in the Ma'oz Sur, we describe how the Yevanim nikvitsu alai, how our enemies, the Syrian Greeks, they gathered against us. Azai b'mech hashmanim ufartzu chomos migdalai v'timu kol hashmanim. Let's think about Hanukkah for a minute. It's almost the opposite message of what we're thinking about as we talk about Asara B'Teves, which we'll get to. But we describe how the Yevanim, they gathered against us, not with the intention of laying a siege, which of course is what happened on Asara B'Teves. Like I said, we'll talk about it. But the Yevanim came with the intention of ufartzu chomos migdalai, with breaching the walls, with breaking in. As opposed to laying a siege, which is from the outside, the Yevanim tried to, so to speak, penetrate our inner world. If you look in the Mishnah, in Maseches Midos, that describes the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah describes how when a Jew would come up to Har HaBayis, once one had crossed through the walls of Har HaBayis, you would encounter a small lattice fence called the Sorig. Lifnim mimenu, when a person crossed through the walls in source number 2, when you crossed through the walls of Har HaBayis, you came to this strange little fence. It actually looked like a lattice fence made out of little pieces of wood that were interwoven back and forth. It was a relatively short fence, gavoa asara tfachim. And what was interesting about this fence is that the Mishnah tells us that shalosh esrei piratzos hayusham. There were 13 breaches in that fence. 13 holes had been made in that fence. When were these holes made? When were these breaches breached? Shepartzum malche Yavan. That at some point during the Gaulus of Yavan, which of course we commemorate on Hanukkah, there was an attack on the Beis HaMikdash. Ufartzu chomos migdalai. They breached our walls. They entered into our sacred space. The Yevanim came and they made holes in that latticework fence called the Sorig. And of course, Baruch Hashem, the Chashmonaim fought back. Klal Yisrael was victorious. And the Mishnah tells us, Chazru Ugedarum, that they went back and they fenced in those breaches, V'gazru Kenegdam Shlosas Shrei Hishtachavayos. And they decreed that when a Jew would come to one of those spots and you saw the fence that didn't look exactly right because it had been put back together, you would bow down to Hashem, thanking Hashem for the wonders, the miracles that we saw at that difficult period in Jewish history. The idea of the Soreg, the Mefarshim explain, was sort of as a line indicating Ad Kan, up until here, non-Jews are allowed to travel in the Beis HaMikdash. We think of the Beis HaMikdash as our shul, as our temple, as a place for Jews. The truth is, Ki Vesi Vesi Kare L'chol HaAmim. The Beis HaMikdash was a place for all people. And there are circumstances even in which a non-Jew can offer a karbon. But there's only so far, the same way the Kohen Gadol alone can go into Kodesh Kadashim, and Kohanim can only go into certain areas, and Yisraelim can go to certain areas, well, non-Jews can only go to certain areas. And the Soreg was that indication, this is where a non-Jew can go and no further. And of course, the Yevanim, who looked to blur the line between Jew and Gentile, between Torah ideals and Greek philosophy, they wanted to tear down that fence. They wanted to breach that fence. And they did breach that fence. And of course, we fought back and we found a way to correct that fence, to fix that fence. But one of the ways that our enemies harm us, and that's what's being expressed here, is that they try to infiltrate our lives. They try to cross over into the walls, into our space, the way that sometimes, as the Mefarshim explain, Esav comes as an enemy, trying to fight against Yaakov. But Yaakov Davin, there's another way that Esav can be damaging to the Jewish people, and that's Miyad Achi Miyad Esav. Save me from the hand of my brother, sometimes as an ach, as a brother, who wants to partner with you, who wants to share ideas and ideals, and foreign ideas creep in. And of course, this is one of the great themes of Hanukkah, trying to be proudly Jewish in an authentic Jewish way. When Rav Yosef Kairo is describing in his Beis Yosef commentary on the tour, and he's describing the halachos, and we think of these sometimes as just, you know, different madrigos of frumkeit, but there's actually halachos involved here. When it comes to the Torah prohibition of acting like our non-Jewish neighbors, and we think about it a lot again this time of year, you can't go anywhere without hearing, you know, constant holiday jingles in your ear, and, you know, ads on the radio, just listening to the news, you know, this holiday season, this holiday season, this holiday season, and you're thinking, which holiday are we talking about? Hanukkah's over, what holiday season are we talking about? It creeps into our life, and we have to be reflective, we have to think about that. So the Beis Yosef writes that when the Torah prohibits us to act in the ways of the Amori, the Darkei Amori, and you wonder, like, what is that? What is that even talking about? So he quotes the opinion of the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, one of the great Rishonim, that echod mishum nichush, one is a prohibition to be involved in all sorts of witchcraft and sorcery. Okay, I imagine most of us don't struggle too much with that. But secondly, there's a prohibition of chukas goyim, of trying to mimic and to act in a way that is foreign to Jewish ideas and Jewish values. Ve'inyan hasheini asher yesh la'asor mishum chukas goyim, and look how he defines the definition of acting, the prohibition of acting in a way which is non-Jewish, which is not true to our tradition, is to act in a way who davar asher shayich bo pritzus derech atznius v'ha'anava v'nagu bo hagoyim gam ze'asar. To act in a way that is a breach of pritzus, partzu chomos megdalai. Pritzus in the sense of breaching, a breach of the derech atznius, and of course that doesn't only include clothing, but it does also include clothing. Right? To act in a way that is tzanua in our behavior, to act in a way that is humble. One of the fundamentals of Kabbalah Satorah is that Hashem chose Har Sinai, a humble mountain. Moshe Rabbeinu, our great teacher, is praised by the Torah for his humility more than anything else. To act in a way that is unassuming, that is inconspicuous, to act in a way that is refined and reserved, and to not operate in a way that is simply not Jewish. And to think about that. And Hanukkah gives us a chance to reflect on that, to think about that. In Pirkei Avos, Shimon ben Shetach tells us in the first parak that we should be very careful when coming to a court case. We have to be very, very careful to investigate the witnesses, to check the witnesses, make sure that they're telling the truth. The Gemara, the Mishnayos describe a whole system by which we ask a series of questions to try to understand, is this person authentic, is this person inauthentic, telling the truth or not? Shimon ben Shetach warns us in Pirkei Avos, have a marba lachkor es ha'edim. Check the witnesses carefully. Lachkor, chakira. Analyze the witnesses carefully. Don't take their word at face value. Ask pointed questions. Pirkei Avos was not written only for people who sit on a beis din. It wasn't written only for dayanim. Pirkei Avos, maybe more than any other area of Torah Shebaal Peh, is written on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. They're a lesson for each and every one of us. How is this relevant to you and I? How is it relevant to us? I'm not on a beis din. I don't know if anyone here sits on a beis din. I imagine not. Right? What does it mean? Be careful to check the witnesses. In what context does a person need to check the witnesses? The Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1979, in a Motzei Shabbos shir that he gave, he said, you know what it means for each and every Jew? It means, like the Gemara says, that there's going to be witnesses that testify against us at the end of our life. What is going to stand to testify for us or against us? The things that we surround ourselves with. The things that, and I'm not talking about only physical things, the values that we bring into our home. The language that we speak. The clothing that we wear. The books that we read. Right? The devices that we have or don't have access to or use in a way that's appropriate or inappropriate in our life. All of these things are going, the Gemara says in Maseches Chagiga, are going to stand up and testify on our behalf or against us. And therefore, the Lubavitcher Rebbe explained this Mishnah in 1979, check the witnesses carefully. The Talmud explains in source number 5 that the testimony of witnesses can apply to our personal lives as well. It states the walls of one's home testify about him. By looking at the books on our shelves, the pictures on our walls, and the absence or presence of our mezuzah, we can get some idea of who we're talking to. Right? Check your witnesses. Who is going to stand in your defense? Or who is, God forbid, going to stand against us? Again, these are some of the things we think about coming out of the Yom Tov of Hanukkah. Yavan's infiltration. The way that Yavan tries to permeate our lives. I heard a story that someone once heard from Rav Gifter Zatzal. Rav Mordechai Gifter once shared that his two uncles, Rav Elia Meir Blach and Rav Matal Katz, who in the most horrifying conditions escaped from Europe, Telz was completely decimated during the war. They both suffered terrible, terrible personal losses. They came to America and they rebuilt the Telz Yeshiva in America. So Rav Mordechai Gifter, who of course himself became the Rosh Yeshiva many years later in Telz, he said that his two uncles, when they came to America, were conversing one time. And one of them said, I'm not sure who said it, whether it was Rav Blach or Rav Katz, one of them said to the other, you know, it's amazing, we've been in America for so long now, for a number of years now, and thankfully, the American culture hasn't affected us. And the other one responded, and I think it's very deep and very insightful, if you think that you're not affected, that's the ultimate indication that you have been affected. It's impossible to live in an environment that is not our own. We're not in Eretz Yisrael. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We're not living in an environment where we're not going to be affected by our surroundings. It's just the reality of our lives. And the question is, can we try to plug up those breaches? Can we fix those holes in our wall? Can we be more self-aware of the things that are infiltrating, that are penetrating into our inner world? That's what Yavan tried to do. And again, that's what we're commemorating on Chanukah. And now we come to the month of Teves. In particular, again, tonight we're going to talk now about Asara B'Teves, the fast day that we commemorate this Friday. And we need to understand what exactly happened there. Because there, Nebuchadnezzar and his armies were not trying to break through the walls. That would happen later, of course. We have a fast day for that as well. We'll get to that in the summer months, or halavai not this year. Right? But Nebuchadnezzar laid siege on Yerushalayim. Let's just review the history first, a little background, just to make sure that we're familiar with the origins of the fast of Teves. The Psukim tell us at the very, very end of Nevi'im Rishonim, at the end of Malachim Beis, the last parak. Vayihi b'shnas hatshi'is l'malcho. The Melech Tzidkiyahu is now in the ninth year of his reign. Some Jews have already earlier been kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, have already been exiled. Yechoniah has already been exiled with many Jews. Yechezkel Navi has already been exiled. Mordechai has already been exiled, as alluded to in Megillas Esther. And now, all of a sudden, the Navi tells us, b'chodesh ha'asiri ba'asur l'chodesh. In the 10th month, which is Teves, counting from Nisan, on the 10th of the month, which is what we call Asara B'Teves, Ba Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Hu V'chol Chelo Al Yerushalayim. V'yichon Aleh, he encamped upon the city, he surrounded the city, V'yivnu Aleh Dayek Saviv, and he built some type of siege tower to control the ins and outs of the city, V'tavo Ha'ir B'matzor, and the city came under siege, and it lasted Arash. There's something remarkable about this fast that we need to think about. It's not halacha lamaisa, but it's unusual, first of all, that we're fasting on Friday. How often do we fast on Friday? Someone asked me the other day, did we ever have this before? I said, yes, of course we've had it before, but it's every time it comes up, we seem to have forgotten that it once happened before. It's so unusual to go into Shabbos fasting. It's a question in halacha how we're even allowed to do that. Fasting on Shabbos, even more so, totally foreign to us outside of Yom Kippur. But there's something about Asara B'Teves, and I want to try to understand it from a machshava perspective. It's not a halacha shir tonight, but I want to try to understand it from a machshava perspective. There's a weightiness to Asara B'Teves that we don't find by other fasts. When Yechezkel HaNavi is describing the fact that he's aware, he's already outside of Eretz Yisrael, but he gets a message from Hashem that there's going to be an Asara B'Teves. He's informed that there's going to be a siege on Yerushalayim. He's far away, but he receives a nevuah that Yerushalayim is being sieged. Vayihi devar Hashem elai b'shana tshiyas, in source number 7, Yechezkel is told, I received a message, b'chodes ha'asiri b'asur l'chodesh leimur, ben adam, kisav l'cha es shem hayom, es etzem hayom azeh. I want you to note the date. Mark it in your calendar. On this day, the 10th of the 10th month, Asara B'Teves, samach melech bavel el Yerushalayim. The king of Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, laid siege. He surrounded Yerushalayim. Be'etzem hayom hazeh, on this very day. Yechezkel was informed of what was happening in Yerushalayim. Be'etzem hayom hazeh, on this very day. Why is Hashem emphasizing, take note of this date, mark it in your calendar. It's going to be a significant date now and in the future. Etzem hayom hazeh, be'etzem hayom hazeh, be'etzem hayom hazeh. You know what we learned from that be'etzem hayom hazeh? A very unusual halacha. Rav Yosef Cairo, once again, this time in the Beis Yosef, in his writings on the laws of fasting, he quotes from the 14th century Rishon Rav David Avudraham, who says something shocking. He says that if Asara B'Teves were to fall out on Shabbos, which it doesn't, it cannot according to our calendar. We have a set calendar, so it doesn't happen. Friday, yes. Shabbos, no. But in the times when we used to look at the moon and decide when Rosh Chodesh was, if Asara B'Teves were to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast even on Shabbos. Now that's a radical thing to say. And the source, says the Avudraham, the source that we fast on Shabbos is from the words of Yechezkel, Be'etzem, that Hashem told Yechezkel, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, on this very day. You can't move this fast around. You can't push it back, you can't push it forward. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. If it fell out on Shabbos, Rav David Avudraham is quoted by the Beis Yosef as saying, we would fast even on Shabbos. Unlike other fasts, with the exception of Yom HaKippurim. Yom Kippur is the only fast that we fast on Shabbos. Unbelievable. Asar B'Teves. What we call one of the minor fast days. We would fast even on Shabbos. Rav Yosef Karo says, Lo yadati minayin lo zeh. I don't know where he got this from. I mean, I can read the pasuk also, Be'etzamayam hazeh, on that very day. But to be Docha Shabbos, to fast even on Shabbos, what is it about Asar B'Teves that it's so intense, that it's so serious, that we're going to fast this Friday? What's the feeling we're supposed to have? A fast day, the Rambam tells us, fast days are not just about, you know, surviving the day without your cup of coffee. A fast day is a time for self-reflection. A fast day is a time to be able to ask yourself, you know, what am I doing with myself? It's a day of tshuva, it's a day of tefillah. It's not just merely a day of survival. And Asar B'Teves has this certain intensity as we're learning here. So what is the story with Asar B'Teves? How could it be, says Rav Yosef Karo, I don't know, I don't understand how it could be that we would fast on Shabbos. What's the logic behind that? Again, I understand the words, Be'etzam Hayom Hazeh, this very day, but to be Docha Shabbos, to push off Shabbos for a fast day, other than Yom Kippur, very hard to understand. The Chassam Sofer explained the following in a drasha that he gave on Zayin Adar. It's in source number 9, I'll share it with you orally, I'll share it with you outside. The Chassam Sofer says that we know, the Gemara tells us, that any generation that doesn't build the Beis HaMikdash has to sadly look itself in the mirror and say, we have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. If we haven't worked hard enough to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, we have enough pressure in our life, I'm not trying to put pressure on anyone, but if we don't find a way to figure out how to end 2,000 years of Galus, then we've got a problem. And any generation that doesn't build the Beis HaMikdash in its time, it's ki'ilu nechrav b'yamav, it's as if we've destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So that means every year, when we get to Asar B'Teves, explains the Chassam Sofer, Asar B'Teves being the starting point of the downfall of Yerushalayim, the first siege around Yerushalayim, the Nebuchadnezzar, we're talking about Bavel, we're talking about Bais Rishon, the first Beis HaMikdash. So that first siege around Yerushalayim is sort of the beginning of the Chorban. In other words, says the Chassam Sofer, in Shemayim, it's being decided this Friday if there's going to be a Tisha B'Av this year, if there's going to be a Shiva Asar B'Tammuz this year. We have the ability to stop it this Friday. Hashem and Shemayim is looking down and saying, okay, am I going to allow the siege to take place and eventually the breaching of the walls and eventually the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash? Are we going to be another year, another generation that fails to reverse the trend? Or are we somehow going to reverse the trend? Now, how does this inform the fact that maybe we would even fast on Shabbos? Says the Chassam Sofer, because when we fast on things of the past, so we wouldn't fast on Shabbos. Atzara, when we're commemorating something that happened in the past, so we're not gonna fast on Shabbos to commemorate Atzara. But when a person is in danger right now, when a person's in a situation that is frightful to that individual right now, what's an example? The Chassam Sofer says, Atanis Chalom. If a person has a frightening dream, something horrific happened in their dream and they're truly scared that it's going to happen to them, they can wake up Shabbos morning and choose to fast, even on Shabbos. They can fast on Shabbos because they're so afraid that they feel that I need to be mevatel this scary dream by fasting. Because it's a threat to me right now. I feel a threat in my life right now. I'm not commemorating something of the past. I feel threatened right now. So says the Chassam Sofer, how could it be that we would fast even on Shabbos for Asar B'Teves? Because Asar B'Teves, something is being determined in Shemayim right now. It's a Yom Kippur of sorts, it's a day of judgment of sorts, of whether or not there's going to be a Chorban this year. Whether we're going to have to sit on the floor in Shul on Tisha B'Av this year, and go through the Kinos again, and commemorate the fact that we failed again, that we didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. So that experience is happening right here, right now. That's not recalling something of the past. And therefore, Asara Batavius has a certain intensity to it that maybe is not going to be true by the other fasts. By the time you get to Shiva Asar Batambis, it's already been determined, as it were, in Shemayim, what's happening this year. Is there going to be a Chorban or not? So because that beginning, that starting point, contains, so to speak, this judgment day and everything that comes after, so there's a certain intensity to it that would even express itself on Shabbos. But I want to think about Asar Batavius not just as the beginning of the end, and that's why it's so significant. I want to try to understand, what is it about a siege that is so threatening? In a sense, even more threatening, even more weighty than the actual Chorban Beis HaMikdash. What is so difficult about a siege? The concept. I want to understand the concept of a siege. Again, before we do that, I want to take just one more step back, and I want to remind ourselves that when we talk about Asar Batavius, it's not just Asar Batavius. Today was the 8th of Teves. Today was the 8th of Teves. Tonight is the 9th of Teves. In the Shulchan Aruch, I don't know anyone who does this, but the Shulchan Aruch records that some have a minhag to fast on the 8th of Teves. Some have a minhag to fast on the 9th of Teves. And obviously, all of us, hopefully, have a minhag to fast on the 10th of Teves. Right? What happened on the 8th of Teves, the 9th? These are very frightening days. What happened on the 8th? What happened on the 9th? What happened on the 10th? If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 10, Bishmona Beteves, Nichtava HaTorah Yevanis, Bimei Talmai HaMelech. In the period of Talmai HaMelech, the Torah was translated into Greek language. And you know what happened when that occurred? Chazal tell us, Hayachoshech Ba'olam Shlosha Yamim. The world went dark for 3 days. I don't know if that's a physical darkness. I imagine it's more of a spiritual darkness for those who had eyes to see. But there was something so terrible, something so egregious about translating the Torah into Greek, that the world went dark for 3 days. The Shulchan Aruch says that on the 9th of Teves, we're not sure exactly what happened, but we have a tradition that something bad happened. Other sources fill in. Perhaps we commemorate the art side of Ezra and Nehemiah, two of the great builders in the return to Eretz Yisrael, in the period of the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash of Bayis Sheni. But the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th, it's sort of a package of bad days. What does it mean that the world went dark for 3 days when the Torah was translated into Greek? What's so bad about translating the Torah into Greek? What's so terrible? Is it, you know, should we be concerned that, you know, that Archbold translates Svarim all the time into English, into French, into Russian, into all sorts of languages, right? It's a magnificent kindness that we have in our world today to give greater access to Torah. What was so terrible about translating the Torah into Greek? I once had this chus about 15 years ago. I was in Bnei Brak one time, and this is very uncharacteristic of me, but I got up the courage to go to an Adam Gadol, whose name maybe is well known, maybe not so well known, Rav Nosson Gestetner. I remember when he passed away 10 years ago, in our Beth Abraham Shabbos newsletter, Rabbi Neuberger made note of the fact that he had passed away. A very, very tremendous Talmud Chacham. Again, maybe not so well known in America. And it was very uncharacteristic of me. I was fond of his svarim, and I decided to stop by his house to buy a few svarim, and I knocked on the door, and I had this chus to meet him one time. A remarkable Jew, really an unbelievable Jew. Rav Nosson Gestetner, in one of his svarim, it's called Lahoros Nosson, he asked this question: what was so terrible about translating the Torah into Greek? Why did the world go dark for 3 days? So he explains that we know that the Torah operates on many dimensions. The Torah, on a surface level, is a nice history book. The Torah records historical accounts of the Jewish people, what happened in the past. Right? The Torah has mitzvos, the Torah has all sorts of things. But the Torah, of course, operates on many different levels. The Torah has what we call a pardes, an orchard, a pshat, a remez, drush, and sod. There's the simple interpretation of the Torah. There are hints in the Torah. There are drushos in the Torah. There are secrets in the Torah. What happens if you translate the Torah into a language other than Lashon HaKodesh? The surface level is still there. But all of the inner content that is hinted to in the letters of Lashon HaKodesh, it's all lost. And Rav Nosson Gestetner said that's why the world went dark for 3 days. Because when you just have the superficial outer layer of the Torah, you lose all of that inner world of Torah. You lose the remez, you lose the drush, and you lose the sod, and you're left with a very superficial, external Sefer Torah with an inside, with an inner dimension of Torah that is totally crumbling, that can't be accessed. And I was thinking to myself today, that's kind of like a siege. What happens when there's a siege? When a military operation takes place and the enemy surrounds a city and they control the insides and the outside And in particular, they're causing tremendous damage, not like the Yavanim who breached the walls, but that they're closing off, they're surrounding the city in such a way that they're cutting off the essential supplies from reaching the inside. That slowly the insides are starting to fall apart. The insides don't have the resources that they need to maintain themselves. And that's what Asar B'Teves is. Asar B'Teves, a siege, means that I feel that I've been trapped indoors, I've been trapped inside, and I don't have the resources that I need to survive. And now we come to really the point that I want to share with you tonight. Because this is what I've been thinking about. Obviously, you think about whatever you'd like. But this is what I want to try to think about this Friday, Asar B'Teves. My friends, we've been under siege for the last, I don't know, how many months has it been at this point? 8 months, 9 months. This virus, what's happening in the world now, is a siege of sorts. It's our inability to move about the way that we'd like to move about. We're not able to come and go as freely as we'd like. How many people, is there anyone here who hasn't been affected in some way to be forced inward, to be stuck indoors, whether for a shorter period of time or a longer period of time, but our lives have been overturned. Many of our children have been quarantined or have been, you know, forced to stay home from summer camps and so many situations, or the inability to daven indoors. Someone said to me today, I was davening Minchat outdoor minyan today. Someone said to me, I hadn't seen him in a while. He said, I haven't been to shul in 9 months. That's an unbelievably difficult thing. That's a form of a siege. That's a feeling of being trapped, of not being able to move about as I'd like to move about. I remember I saw an article at the beginning of this whole crazy pandemic back in April. There was a New York Times article about a couple that was on their honeymoon on one of these islands in the South Asia. And they got stuck. They got stuck on this island. They were the last tourists on this island, and they got stuck at this beautiful, you know, this paradise of an island. And the headline of the article, I have it in front of me, it says, they were the last couple in paradise, now they're stranded, right? They went on this beautiful vacation, but at a certain point, the inability to just get to where they wanted, they were stuck in paradise. They were stuck in their, you know, in their physical Gan Eden of this world. And they ended up being there for weeks beyond the amount of time, and all they wanted to do was go home. They weren't enjoying their vacation anymore, right? For some people, you know, the ability to work from home was very exciting at the beginning, but for some people it's become very burdensome, the inability to move freely in our lives. And this feeling of being forced into that inner enclosure, and maybe I don't have the resources, maybe I don't have the things that I need, maybe the essential supplies are not reaching me, and I don't feel that I can go out to get them the way that I would like to. That spiritually, to me, is what Asar B'Teves is about. It's when we feel trapped in our lives and I'm stuck on the inside, I'm stuck in my own inner world with an inability to get the things that I need. I don't have, initially we were, you know, it was a nice bonding opportunity, but now it's causing major shalom bias issues. And now it's no longer so simple. And we need to find a way to get out of this siege, to get out of these walls that are surrounding us, that are trapping us, that we're stuck indoors, that we're stuck inside and we don't have the resources that we need. This past Shabbos, we read Parshas Miketz. And Parshas Miketz, of course, begins with a very strange dream. Paro has this unusual dream with the skinny cows and the fat cows and the emaciated cows. These skinny cows, they swallow up the healthy cows. And they swallow up the cows. And Paro says to Yosef, as he's trying to offer an interpretation of his dream, Paro says, it's remarkable. Here, with these skinny, unhealthy cows, they ate these large, healthy cows, and nothing changed on their insides. They remained the same skinny cows that they were. The Holy Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, explained in a piece of Torah from 1873. Sfas Emes passed away in 1905. In 1873, the Ger Rebbe explained, what is this imagery that the Torah is presenting to us of the skinny cows and the fat cows, and how sometimes the unhealthy cows are consuming the healthy cows to the point that nothing is changing, that the skinny cows remain skinny in an unhealthy way. Explains the Sfas Emes, Achsrichen liros shelo lios nitva b'mashal zeh. The Sfas Emes says sometimes, again, we drown, we're being swallowed up, we're being trapped. Bavel was surrounding us the same way that those unhealthy cows were surrounding, were eating, were consuming the healthy cows. And yet there was no change, there was no growth. There was no greater health. There was no sustenance that was coming from this. And explains the Sfas Emes, Shezeh sheparos haraos balu hatovos velo noda. That which the unhealthy cows had consumed the healthy cows. They had used up all of the healthy resources, so to speak. Velo noda, and it was unnoticeable. There was no change. Ki ba'u v'chulu, as the pasuk says, that the larger cows entered the skinny cows, and they were unchanged. That it didn't make a difference to them. Af shekol hachilas shalahem hapnimiyas shehu tov, ach shelo nikarza. What this Vasemis is saying, that sometimes, you know, what's the advantage of a siege? Let's say it like this. What is the opportunity of a siege? When you're stuck inside, what is the opportunity? The opportunity is to look inward and to try to recognize the things that maybe you have inside already, to be more resourceful about the things that you already have. Sometimes we distract ourselves by life by being too, you know, turned outward. By being forced inward, by bubbles surrounding us, by Nebuchadnezzar laying siege and forcing the Jewish people to turn inward. So at first there's this panic. I don't have the resources. I can't survive stuck indoors like this. I need that access to the outside world. But the challenge and the opportunity of Asar B'Teves, of being stuck, so to speak, trapped inward, stuck as it were in Yerushalayim, is to say, you know what, maybe I have the resources that I need. Maybe even though it looks like the unhealthy habits of my life have consumed the healthy habits of my life, that the unhealthy cows have consumed the healthy cows, and it looks like I'm out of resources, maybe even though I can't recognize it, maybe they are there. Maybe there is, in the pnimius, maybe on the inside, there is something there, even though I can't recognize it initially. Yosef HaTzadik got the world through a famine. Explains the Sfas Emes. Yosef HaTzadik became the person who had gathered inside, had stored up on the inside, all of those resources, which in a time when it looked like we were running out of resources, Yosef HaTzadik was able to distribute exactly what everyone needed to survive. We all have resources inside of ourselves, inside of our homes, inside of our lives, inside of our hearts, inside of our neshamas, that we sometimes don't have access to, or we don't realize we have access to, until we come under siege. Sometimes we're forced to dig deep and it can be a painful experience. And sometimes initially there's a panic. How are we going to survive without our essential needs, with everything being cut off from us? But the opportunity of a siege is to turn inward and to say, maybe I have the bare necessities. Maybe I have what it takes to survive. Maybe some of the excesses of my life that have been cut off, not by choice, but against my will, maybe I'm actually better off without them. When Yaakov Avinu is also experiencing galus, and he's running for his life, and he's not sure exactly what's going to be with his brother Esav, and he's not sure exactly where he's heading. And Yaakov Avinu has this awesome dream also, with the angels going up and down, and Yaakov is running from his parents' home, and he has that awesome dream. The Medrash says in Source 14, Rabbi Yeshua says that the psukim are describing galus. Yaakov's dream of the ladder, up and down, the angels, it's representing the different ups and downs of the Jewish experience. And Yaakov, upon waking up and recognizing that he's in a holy place, he makes a deal with Hashem. When he realizes that sometimes I'm going to be under siege, sometimes I'm going to be exiled, I'm going to be chased out of my home, sometimes I'm going to be forced, squeezed into my home. Yaakov Avinu makes a deal with Hashem. And he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Source 15, Vayidar Yaakov Neder Lemor. Yaakov makes a promise to Hashem. Hashem, if you'll just be with me, if you'll be by my side, Ushmarani Baderech Hazeh, if you'll just stick with me, Hashem, as long as I have Hashem, so to survive, do I have clothing to wear? I know my vacation plans got canceled. I know my life has become much more stressful. I know this I don't have, or that I don't have, and I haven't been able to go here to visit this one in a long time, or that one in a long time. But do I have the bare necessities? And if I do, Yaakov Avinu says, then Hashem, I owe you everything in the world. That's what Yaakov Avinu realized in the Galus experience. That sometimes a Jew is forced to turn inward to realize that, you know what? Maybe I have the supplies that I need. I may not have everything that I want, but maybe I have enough of what I need to survive. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu was creating the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up a very fine balance between revealing himself and concealing himself. The Gemara describes it as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unfolding the world, unraveling the world, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally said, okay, stop. At a certain point, Hashem said, this is the line where I stop revealing myself. If I reveal myself too much, then it's too obvious to believe in Hashem. If I hide myself too much, it's impossible to believe in Hashem. Hashem set up this precise balance. It's a name of Hashem that we're familiar with, the name Shakai, Shin Dalid Yod. The Gemara tells us that Shakai is Hashem's way of saying, Ani hu shamarti la'olam dai. I said to the world, enough. That's enough for you. That's all you need. Often we read this Gemara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu drawing that line, like Hashem is bestowing goodness upon the world and revealing himself in the world. And then Hashem says, okay, that's it. You're not getting any more. Hashem said, dayenu, enough. We often read this Gemara in a very negative way. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of saying, I'm not giving you anything more. And we're left saying, Hashem, why would you do that to me? Why are you cutting me off? Why are you not giving me my needs? Why are you not offering me the supplies that I need? I feel trapped by that. Hashem, why are you turning your back on me? Hashem says, die. That's sufficient. But the truth is, it's a very positive way to read this Gemara. For years, I always saw this Gemara as Hashem, you know, this is the moment where Hashem pulls back, pulls away. But it's actually a very, very encouraging Gemara if you read it in a different way. The Alter of Slobodka, the great Alter of Slobodka, had a son, Rav Avram Shmuel Finkel. He was a great mashgiach in his own right. We have a small sefer from him called the Nesivos HaMusar. And he quotes this Gemara, he quotes this idea, Sha'amar la'olam odai, that Hashem said to the world, okay, that's all I'm giving you. Hashem says, you know, you maxed out the credit card, you can't have any more. That's all you're getting. Hashem, but I need more. Says Rav Avram Shmuel Finkel, the son of the Alter of Slobodka. He says, you know what the real perish, the real explanation of this Gemara is? Ulam perish hamaymer sha'amar la'olam odai. That when Hashem says to his world, enough, it's not Hashem withdrawing. It's not Hashem pulling back. It's not Hashem leaving you trapped, not knowing how am I going to get the resources that I need and feeling stuck, like as if I'm under siege. When Hashem says, Sha'amar la'olamo dai, hu dafka lehefech, it's the very opposite. It's Hashem's way of saying to you, I know your life is hard. I know this child is acting out, or I know it's been hard financially, or I know your shalom bias is a little bit stressed out from this pandemic, and I know you haven't been able to visit the parents or the in-laws or your children who are you made aliyah 2 years ago, or your cousins, or this simcha you missed, or that simcha got canceled. I know it seems like you're not going to be able to survive. But Hashem says, die, I gave you enough. Not in a negative sense. Rather, ha-perish hu sheyesh dai sipu kechol ha-tzorech ba'olam. I'm forcing you to dig deep to recognize that you have what you need. Maybe you don't have everything that you want. But Hashem says, I'm promising you, I'm not going to leave you alone. Yaakov Avinu said to Hashem, I'm going into Golis. Hashem, all I'm asking is to give me my basics. Make sure I have bread to eat, clothing to wear. Sometimes we struggle even with those things. But Hashem says, I'm telling you, if you feel like you're at wit's end, dig a little deeper. You'll find the emotional energy. Or reach out to someone. Reach out to someone who can help you. Speak to someone who can help you. Certainly the Rebbeim of our shul are happy to be here for anyone in any way. Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi Cohen, myself are happy, and the Rebbetzins are happy to be someone to lean on in these hard times. Right? But to have the confidence that I'm not alone, and that Amar la'olam odai, more than anything, I have a Kadosh Baruch Hu to lean on. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu said the world has enough resources, even when we're under siege, even when we're stuck on some paradise island that we think we can't get somewhere. If I'm with Hashem, then I'm on paradise, then I have what I need. Sha'amar la'olam odai, I have enough to make it through. Sha'kol ma sha'osoy lios matzoy, whatever is meant to be, whatever needs to be, matzoy hu b'zabriya. Hashem didn't make the world lacking resources, even in those difficult moments of life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us what we need to find our way through. I want to end with the final source and a final story. And again, I want to hope that we'll be able to live with this a little bit, to get chizik from this. Not to feel, again, on Asar B'Teves, that look how we, like those Jews in Yerushalayim, were stuck in Yerushalayim for those 3 years and couldn't find a way out. Right? I don't want us to look at this time period and only see everything that's not working out. I want us to turn inward and reflect and say, you know what? If Hashem has forced us to turn inward, so maybe that's an opportunity. Maybe this year on Asar B'Teves and Shemayim, Hashem will say there's not going to be a Tisha B'Av this year. I want to end with a sefer called Avodas Pnim, a sefer I'm very fond of. It was a Jew who lived in Tveria about 75 years ago. Rav Aaron Yosef Luria. And he describes one of the most difficult nisyonos that a Jew has ever faced, Akedas Yitzchak. Avram and Yitzchak are on their way to the Akedah. And they're having a conversation, a very uncomfortable conversation, about what exactly is going on here. Vayomer hinei ha'esh v'ha'itzim v'ayei ha'sel la'ola. We know the pasuk, Bereishis Chaf Beis. Vayomer hinei ha'esh v'ha'itzim. We've got the fire. We've got the wood. What exactly are we planning on offering when we get to the mountain? And of course, Avram is trying to, in some sensitive way, right, reveal and conceal to Yitzchak that you might be the Karvan. But explains the Avodas Pnim, explains this Slonimer Chassid who lived in Tveria about 75 years ago. Al Derech Remez, on a deeper level, and again, that's the beauty of Torah, it operates on so many levels. What is the message the Torah is sharing with us? Hine ha'esh v'ha'etzim. We have the etzim. What is the etzim? Hainu ha'etzos v'ha'chana l'avodaso yisbarach. We've got the right ideas. We've got the right advice. We know in theory what we're supposed to do. And sometimes we recognize that what? We've got the esh. We've got the inspiration. We have those moments where we feel that we have the energy to make it happen. But sometimes, you know what's missing? The se la'ola. The sacrifice itself. I don't think I can do it. You're asking too much. Hashem, I want to be an inspired Jew. And I know in my mind, I have the etzah. I heard a shir. I read a sefer. I spoke to my therapist. I know what I'm supposed to be doing or supposed to be feeling, but I'm not sure how to bring the carbon. I'm not sure how to make the offering. I feel like I'm stuck inside. And I feel like I don't have the resources. I haven't reached that inner point. Limsor atzmo ke carbon laHashem yisbarach, to actually feel that I've actually, you know, achieved the goal of whatever this strange siege is all about. Wherever this is coming from, whatever message Hashem is sending, I feel like, you know, I feel like I just can't finish the job. And to this, Avram responds to his son Yitzchak, Elokim yira lo haseh la'ola b'ni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us finish the job. Hashem is going to help us to finish the job. Hashem is not going to leave us without the resources that we need. Even though we feel that we're under siege, even though we feel that we're, you know, we're at wit's end at this point, and we just need this vaccine to get us back to basic, you know, living the way that we took it for granted before all of this started. I'm not sure if I can finish the job. We're going to make it to the end of the school year without having to shut down again. Are the summer camp's going to open this year? Am I ever going to go back to my regular work? Am I going to be able to find that new job in this environment? Is my shalom bayis going to be restored? Things have been totally out of whack. And yet, Avram responds to his son, yes, Elokim yiralo haseh la'ola. Hashem is going to help us to figure out what we need. Haynu shelizeh tzarech siyata d'shmai. It's true. We need Hashem's help. And that's what Yaakov Avinu said. After waking up from that awesome dream, and he says, I understand there's going to be a galus. Hashem, I just need, help me to realize that I have the basics. Help me to realize I have the food to eat and the clothing on my back. And Hashem, I'm incredibly indebted to you that I've made it this far. And maybe, he says, this is the inner intent of a parable, of a mashal, that is recorded in the Sefer Toldos Yaakov Yosef, one of the students of the Baal Shem Tov. He gives a mashal, he brings a mashal of a person who recorded a list of all of his possessions. Right? He was going on a trip. You find this mashal in secular sources as well. Imagine a person's going on a trip and they're writing down all the things that they need for the trip. Right? Did you pack this? Check, check, check. Do you have this? You have this? You have this? You have this? Right? To the point where at the end the person says, but wait a minute, I feel like I'm missing something. What's missing? You're missing yourself. Lo matzas atzmo. Right? I packed everything in the suitcase, but I forgot to pack myself. I feel like I have, like, you know, I have sort of the outer trappings, but I don't have that inner essence. I don't have the main thing that I need to make it a successful trip. So Hashem, you know, I feel, yeah, I sort of feel like I have the resources to get through, but there's this gaping hole in my life that I just feel like, I don't know, there's a part of me that's just not going to make it. That my suitcase is going to make it onto the plane, but I'm not going to make it on the plane back to Yerushalayim, to Mekabel Mashiach Tzidkenu. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and Avraham Avinu taught it to his son, Elokim Yira Lo Haseh Lo'ola. Hashem is going to help you to find whatever that last piece that we need is. I'll just end with a little sweet little story that I read about Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro. He was a big Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He passed away in 2006. He unfortunately suffered from kidney failure, and he used to go for dialysis treatments. And he was sitting one time, he was sitting in the hospital for hours for this treatment for his kidneys, and he was sitting next to a very fine religious Jew who was sitting there, and he had headphones in his ear, and he was listening to Shirim this whole time. This other fellow who was sitting next to him, this Talmud Chacham was sitting next to him. And Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro was just sitting there the whole time. He wasn't doing anything. Wasn't reading a sefer. Certainly wasn't watching watching something on a screen. Wasn't listening to a shir. He was just sitting there. And for a Chashuv Rosh Yeshiva, it almost seemed like, you know, like, what's going on here? And he had a little conversation with the fellow next to him who was listening to all these shirim with the headphones. So finally, one of the nurses felt bad for him. And she said, Harav Shapiro, would you like some headphones? I can get you some headphones also. You could also, you know, I feel badly. You know, maybe you forgot your Gemara in the car or whatever. You're just sitting here. You look, you know, you look like, I don't know, look like you're not doing anything. So she said, can I get you a pair of headphones also. You can listen to something to pass the time, or listen to a shiur or something. So he says to the nurse, he says, thank you very much. He says, but a person who hears it on the inside doesn't need to pump it in from the outside. He said, I have exactly what I need. Inside of me, I have exactly what I need. He was probably sitting there for hours, who knows, working out shiurim in his own mind. But he was able to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me what I need. I don't always need to be, you know, we live in a world where we're always trying to bring in more from the outside. The siege of Yerushalayim, where we're commemorating this Friday, Asar B'Teves, with the hope and the tefillah that we're not going to have a Tisha B'Av this year, is to say, you know what, when Hashem trapped you inside, turn inward. Turn it into a bracha. Turn inward. And realize that you have what you need on the inside. When it looks like the skinny cows have swallowed up the healthier cows, and there's no more resources, and the skinny cows are still just as skinny, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to survive, realize that they have what they need to survive. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us lechem lechol, beged lilbosh. Hashem gives us what we need. Hashem gives us what we need to make it through. So, b'siyata d'shmaya, Hashem should help us. Again, these are difficult days. These are dark, cold days. Not only spiritually, obviously physically. These are the darkest nights of the whole year, the coldest nights of the whole year. But it's an opportunity when we're forced to be a little bit more indoors. It's a way of Hashem saying, dig a little deeper. I know that's sometimes hard to hear. But try to turn inward. As that siege is laid around Yerushalayim, right, let's turn it into a source of bracha, a time of personal reflection, a time of personal growth. And then Amir Tzashem, we'll be able to emerge from this siege, emerge from this pandemic, to be able to free ourselves from whatever it is that's holding us back in life, and to return to Yerushalayim with Mashiach b'mehera b'yameinu. Thank you all for being here. I hope it's some food for thought. And Amir, thank you very much.
Thank you.